Now it's time for our weekly check-in on national politics. We're less than 2 weeks away from Election Day. Well, the other one, when the electors cast their final votes for President-elect Donald Trump. Probably. There's some movement in other directions. And Congress could be facing some budget challenges when they begin in January, especially congressional Democrats.
Also, President-elect Trump has continued naming people to his cabinet as he transitions to the White House, including former rival Ben Carson to the Housing and Urban Development post.
Paul Singer joins us now to talk about national politics. He's the Washington correspondent for USA Today. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Good. Well, let's start with this parade of cabinet appointments and near appointments. Dr. Ben Carson, formerly Donald Trump's rival on the packed Republican presidential field, now Department of Housing and Urban Development. There's talk of, you know, well, he's a doctor, Health and Human Services. That's not going to happen. What are people saying about this announcement?
The Carson one's a bit of a head scratcher. Normally look to a cabinet appointment for somebody who has relevant experience in that area or relevant management experience for that matter. Carson at one point during this process had indicated that he didn't feel like he had sufficient management experience to run any government agency and had sort of taken himself out of the running for HHS. This one is a little odd because he has no relevant public housing experiences other than the fact that he lived in public housing when he was a child. So I honestly don't know. I mean, the conversation around Washington has been that, obviously Ben Carson's a very smart guy and a very accomplished fellow. He's not accomplished in this area. So it'll be interesting to see how he manages HUD. Now, I will say that HUD is the sort of federal agency that everybody ignores. It is frequently treated as a backwater where your primary goal as the Secretary of Housing is to not get indicted.
And there had been on that Ben Carson had grown up in a public housing that was out there for a while. Turns out people who had initially said no, that isn't true. He'd grown up in a poverty-stricken area, but not in public housing itself. So this was bouncing around out there again.
Raises this whole question of so what exactly is the relevance of his experience that makes him a good choice, right? And we can't quite figure it out.
And then moving on to other appointments, we're hearing noises, it seems likely a couple more appointments coming along. Marine General retired John Kelly is head of the Department of Homeland Security, joining other generals on Donald Trump's main team. Trump got some attention when he said he was smarter than the generals when it came to figuring out a plan to tackle ISIS. He's bringing a lot of those generals on board now.
Yeah, and he's picking General Mattis, a former Marine, for the Defense Department, which, there's some discussion about. There's a technical loophole there that Congress has to waive in order to allow Mattis to take that position. You're supposed to be out of uniform 7 years before you can take that position, and he's only been out, I think, 3 or 4. So, it's kind of strange that he's ending up with a pretty heavy general-dominated cabinet. He's also got General Mike Flynn, right, who is going to be his national security advisor. So, you would say, on one hand, that it's good that he is getting advice of people who are well-versed in the area where we have some great concerns in national security. On the other hand, there have been significant concerns raised that is he sort of having too militarized a cabinet? I obviously offer no opinions on that front, but it is worth considering. For what it's worth, he also just recently, in the past hour, named Scott Pruitt, who is the Oklahoma Attorney General, to be the head of EPA. Again, a controversial pick because he is seen as somebody who is very friendly with the oil industry, which makes the environmentalists a little crazy.
Right. That's the other one I wanted to get to today. People have pointed out that in some key posts, Donald Trump has taken people who oppose a lot of what they're going to manage. So in this case, the EPA, someone who opposes a lot of their current regulations, Health and Human Services, someone very devoted to overturning Obamacare, other things like that. So we're getting some pretty strong signals from a lot of these appointments, aren't we?
We are, but I wouldn't make a whole lot of that as being out of the ordinary. And keep in mind that, you know, Republicans in general over the past 20 years have had significant concerns about the growth of government and the growth of regulation. And so Republican administrations frequently end up appointing people to head these agencies that the agency advocates consider to be enemies of the cause. That's not all that unusual. But it is a statement once again that change is coming in Washington. There will be, I think, a very significant change in policy between the Obama administration and, say, the Energy Department or the EPA in the Obama administration, and the Energy Department of the EPA in a Trump administration. There will be a change.
One spot we don't know who's going to be there. A lot of names out there still. Secretary of State, Mitt Romney, Rudy Giuliani, the list goes on. What are the latest rumblings on that?
Well, I heard your name for that one.
if selected, I will serve. Sure,
right,
why not?
Exactly.
What does that pay?
You know,
I don't know what the pay is on that, but...
I don't know either. I'm not sure what the cabinet pays for Secretary of State, but you get good travel benefits and then all the frequent flyer miles you can have. I mean, I think at this point it is up to Donald Trump alone, obviously, to make these decisions. And he keeps dropping little hints. This morning he said something along the lines of, yeah, I've ruled some of those people out, but I'm not going to tell you which ones. To some degree, I think he enjoys the drama of this, the kind of game show quality. It's weird, but... You know, you just have to wait to see what he chooses, and it's frequently the case that it is really who he is most comfortable with, who he feels he has a rapport with. I personally would be stunned if he chose Mitt Romney, given what Mitt Romney has said about him in the past. Although there are, I think, Republicans who would be very comforted by a Mitt Romney choice, because Romney is seen as kind of level-headed and diplomatic in ways that Trump is not. So maybe that comes into some sort of account. I do not know. But no, we're just waiting for the shoe to drop.
Talking to national politics with Paul Singer, Washington correspondent for USA Today and rumored contender for the Secretary of State position, according to a rumor I just now started. We'll pick up that conversation in just a few moments. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Right now, we continue our weekly check-in on the latest political happenings in Washington.
Paul Singer stays with us, Washington correspondent for USA Today. Paul, let's turn to Congress now. Republican majorities in both houses with a president who will presumably sign their legislation. What are you looking for out of the starting gates?
Well, the first thing, obviously, is to get this Congress done with, and so they're passing a spending bill in the next couple of days and try to wrap that up. You know, the very first thing out of the box I'm expecting early next year will be some kind of Obamacare repeal provision. Now, Speaker Paul Ryan has been pretty clear that it will take some time to fully repeal and replace Obamacare over time. It's not easy, and they have to come up with legislation that will fix all of it, but it would not surprise me in the least to see them come up with some kind of a bill, even a what they call a budget reconciliation bill that can pass without needing to sustain a filibuster, just 51 votes. They could do that in early January and have some provision in there that would repeal Obamacare. You know, one of the things that has been pointed out is that any number of things that they might want to start doing first thing out the door in January, they might have to hold these bills for a little while because obviously they have to wait until President Trump takes office to sign them.
And then on the Democratic side, there's been some talk of whether they want to go full-on obstructionist as much as they can with minorities, but a filibuster possibility in the Senate, or if they want to look for room for cooperation on things like infrastructure spending.
Right. I mean, I think there's some places where Democrats certainly do want to look for cooperation. They'd like to be able to get some stuff done. And some of the things that President-elect Trump is interested in are things that Democrats have a lot of interest in, whether it is infrastructure spending, whether it is, in some cases, renegotiating trade deals, whether it is, you know, some of the tax reform elements that he's interested in. I think they're not interested in all of them, but they might be interested in some of them. So there's places, I think, that Democrats are going to find opportunities to work with the Republicans, and they want to. They you obviously got to save some of your fire for the battles that really matter, like a Supreme Court nomination, for instance, is one that I suspect they will go to the mat on. But I think there are some areas where you'd be surprised at how much bipartisan cooperation we're going to get, which might be kind of fun to watch for a little while because it's been a while since we've seen it.
Here's an issue that's coming up again this week where Donald Trump and congressional Republicans might see some difference. Donald Trump's work with the carrier plant, helping work out a deal apparently with Indiana state money to keep some jobs from moving out of the country, and then tweeting and talking about punitive tariffs on companies that move jobs outside of the United States, 35% tariffs. This is not the kind of talk that a lot of Republicans have liked to hear in the past.
Well, and Donald Trump's entire campaign flipped a lot of Republican orthodoxy on its head. All this free trade stuff, the NAFTA Trans-Pacific Partnership, this is stuff that Republicans liked. It's a sort of classic Chamber of Commerce agenda. So, you know, the places where he's finding allies now on some of the trade opposition, people like Sherrod Brown, a liberal from Ohio, it's just kind of odd. So, yeah, there will be some issues where Donald Trump is going to want to move, and Republicans in his own party are going to say we're not so sure. There, by the way, you will see the same problem with an infrastructure bill, where Donald Trump is going to want to say, let's spend a lot of money on, you know, bridges, airports, and highways, and you're going to find a lot of Republicans who are going to say, hold it. We have a concern about, once again, exploding the deficit, exploding federal spending.
And, Paul, I wanted to get your thoughts on an issue. You've tweeted some things about this over the last week. Fake news, completely made-up news stories making the rounds in social media, or conspiracy theories with very little background. We're going to have a conversation on Central Time about this on Friday. But from where you're sitting, working for USA Today, what are you making of this apparent rise in fake news?
You know, it's really interesting, Rob, that what we're seeing more and more of is a willingness of people to accept news that is clearly fictitious, reject news that is based in fact, and dismiss anything they see that contradicts their views, their beliefs, as some kind of a conspiracy. And it's been a real challenge. I mean, writing about Hillary Clinton's health, for example, was one of these issues where any time you said, well, Hillary Clinton isn't actually sick, you'd get deluged with emails and angry calls saying, yeah, she is, and they'd link you to all kinds of made-up symptoms that she was apparently having. It is impossible to have a meaningful conversation about policy if we don't agree that the basic facts matter. And that's what is worrisome to me, is that in some cases we are concluding that basic facts don't matter. It's my beliefs that matter, and to heck with what's actually true.
We'll leave it there for now. Paul, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
We're talking to Paul Singer, Washington correspondent at USA Today. He joined us to give us some of the latest in politics from Congress to the presidential transition.